You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire. The House moves forward on Section 702 reauthorization. Ukraine suspends a top cybersecurity official. A Wisconsin health co-op suffers a data breach. Sophos uncovers a malicious backdoor. Fortinet issues patches for critical and high-severity vulnerabilities. A Microsoft server exposed employee passwords, keys, and credentials. LG releases patches to secure smart TVs. The IMF warns of cyber attacks' potential to trigger bank runs. It was a busy Patch Tuesday. In our Learning Layers segment, Sam Meisenberg and Joe Kerrigan continue their discussion of Joe's CISSP study journey and how to avoid frustration when you get a practice question wrong. And X marks the spot where Elon's impulsiveness turns chaotic. It's Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is your CyberWire Intel Briefing. Thanks for joining us here today. It is great to have you with us. The House Rules Committee has moved forward a revised bill to reauthorize the controversial Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, breaking a long deadlock among Republicans. This program permits warrantless surveillance of foreigners' communications outside the U.S., but can also inadvertently collect Americans' data. The vote was 9-2, setting the stage for a House vote on several amendments, including one requiring warrants to search Americans' information, a provision opposed by the Biden administration. Additionally, the bill proposes using Section 702 data for foreign traveler vetting and formalizes a ban on certain types of digital communication collection. Despite progress, uncertainty remains, especially after former President Trump's call to kill FISA, as well as discontent over not voting on closing data brokers' loopholes, which might be addressed separately. The head of Ukraine's Security Service Cybersecurity Department, Ilya Vituik, has been suspended and reassigned to combat duty following an investigative report by a Ukrainian news organization. The report questioned the affordability of a property owned by Vituik's family, suggesting his official salary wouldn't cover the cost. Following the story, there were allegations of retaliatory actions against the journalist responsible, with claims of military draft enforcement being used as punishment. The SBU is investigating these allegations but has not commented on Vituik's case. Vituik is generally well-respected for his insights into cybersecurity. This incident follows the dismissal of other Ukrainian cybersecurity officials for suspected financial misconduct. Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin is notifying over 530,000 individuals about a data breach from a ransomware attack on January 25th. Although no ransomware was deployed to encrypt files, attackers exfiltrated personal and health information, including Social Security and Medicare numbers. The breach was revealed when a foreign ransomware gang claimed responsibility. GHCSCW, which has worked with the FBI and CISA, has no evidence the stolen information has been misused. In response, the organization says they have enhanced their security measures. The Black Suit ransomware gang, potentially linked to the Royal Ransomware Group, known for targeting over 350 organizations, has listed GHCSCW as a victim on its site. The U.S. Health Department has warned healthcare entities about Black Suit, emphasizing its aggressive focus on the healthcare sector. The team at Sophos XOps discovered a malicious file signed with a valid Microsoft Hardware Publisher certificate, masquerading as Catalog Authentication Client Services by Catalog Talis. Initial suspicions were raised due to typos in the file's version information. Further investigation linked the file to Android screen mirroring software, described as marketing software capable of controlling mobile phones en masse. The file, identified as a malicious backdoor, was originally published by Hainan Yuhu Technology. Sophos XOps found no direct evidence of deliberate involvement of the company who made the Android screen mirroring software, but advised caution when downloading or using their product. The malware included a proxy server, 3Proxy, indicating intent to monitor and intercept network traffic. Sophos XOps reported the backdoor and related findings to Microsoft, leading to the revocation of the compromised files. This incident underscores the ongoing abuse of Microsoft's Windows hardware compatibility program by threat actors. Fortinet has issued patches and advisories for critical and high-severity vulnerabilities across its FortiOS, FortiProxy, and FortiClient products, targeting Linux and Mac platforms. The most critical issue, found in FortiClient for Linux, allows remote code execution through a code injection vulnerability when a user is lured to a malicious website. This affects multiple versions of FortiClient Linux. Another significant flaw in FortiOS and FortiProxy could let attackers obtain administrator credentials under specific conditions via an SSL VPN. Additionally, two high-severity vulnerabilities in FortiClient for Mac could allow local execution of arbitrary code or commands by manipulating the installation process. Fortinet has not reported if these vulnerabilities have been exploited in the wild. Microsoft secured an Azure-hosted server last month that inadvertently exposed employee passwords, keys, and credentials. SOC Radar researchers found that this server, linked to Microsoft's Bing, was accessible online without password protection, containing various security credentials within scripts, codes, and configuration files. This vulnerability could have led to significant data leaks or compromises of Microsoft's services. Although Microsoft addressed this issue on March 5th after being notified on February 6th, it's uncertain if the server was accessed by unauthorized parties. This incident adds to Microsoft's recent security challenges, including criticism for its security practices and previous breaches. Microsoft is reportedly overhauling its security measures in response to these concerns. We note that Microsoft is an N2K CyberWire partner, but we cover them just like we would any other company. Researchers from Bitdefender discovered 4 vulnerabilities in LG TVs running WebOS versions 4 through 7, with 3 rated as severe. These flaws could enable hackers to add unauthorized users, gain elevated access, deploy malware, and potentially infiltrate smart home networks. One allows attackers to bypass PIN verification in the LG ThinkQ app to create privileged profiles, enhancing their access and attack capabilities. Another facilitates full device takeover, while others could be exploited to insert malware or monitor traffic. Initially, over 91,000 devices were reportedly exposed globally. LG has confirmed these vulnerabilities and released patches on March 22nd. The International Monetary Fund, the IMF, reports that cyber attacks have cost the financial sector about $12 billion over the past two decades, highlighting the growing threat these incidents pose to global financial stability. The IMF's Global Financial Stability Report reveals that extreme losses from cyber incidents have increased fourfold since 2017 to $2.5 billion. Financial institutions, particularly banks, are highly vulnerable due to the vast amounts of sensitive data and transactions they process. The sector has experienced over 20,000 cyber attacks, leading to significant economic and reputational damage. The IMF warns of potential bank runs following cyber attacks, suggesting that even the perception of insecurity can lead to destabilizing customer actions, like mass withdrawals. The report emphasizes the need for improved cybersecurity strategies and regulations, especially with the increasing reliance on third-party IT and emerging technologies like AI. Yesterday was Patch Tuesday, and among the best reviews of Microsoft's monthly release comes from our partner and Dean of Research at the SANS Technology Institute, Johannes Ulrich. This update addresses 157 vulnerabilities, including 7 affecting Microsoft Edge through Chromium and 3 deemed critical. Notably, one vulnerability, a proxy driver spoofing issue, was previously disclosed and exploited. A trio of critical vulnerabilities affect Microsoft Defender for IoT, enabling remote code execution. Additionally, the update patches around 40 important rated remote code execution vulnerabilities in Microsoft OLE driver for SQL Server, targeting clients that connect to malicious SQL servers. Furthermore, 7 important vulnerabilities in the DNS server service were patched, requiring perfect timing for exploitation to achieve remote code execution. We'll have a link to Johannes Ulrich's rundown in our show notes. Coming up next on our Learning Layers segment, Sam Meisenberg and Joe Kerrigan continue their discussion of Joe's CISSP journey. Stay with us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Thank you.
On our latest Learning Layers segment, host Sam Meisenberg and Joe Kerrigan continue their discussion of Joe's CISSP study journey and how to avoid frustration when you get a practice question wrong.
Welcome back to another Learning Layer segment. On this segment, we are continuing our conversation with Joe Kerrigan as he gets ready for his CISSP exam. So, Joe,
Yep. Here
we are. You, in the last time that we talked, you actually did some studying.
Enough I did,
talking.
Yeah. You actually used the system.
Nice. You used the system.
The learning management system.
So, or all the cool kids call it the LMS.
LMS, right.
So, as if there's not enough acronyms, you know,
in
CISSP.
That's what we need, more TLAs.
Yeah, exactly. So, how did it go? What did you do? How are you feeling after having a domain under your belt?
Pretty good. Okay. Pretty good. So, we started with domain one because I wanted to do them in order. Now, in the diagnostic, I said I got a 70 on the test. So, I actually didn't do the reading.
Okay.
Because it's a lot of pages of reading for the first domain. I just started with the short videos. And in the short videos, while watching the short videos, on one side, I would have them on one monitor, and off to the side, I would have another monitor with a Google Doc.
Nice.
In my Google Drive, I have a folder that's just CISSP notes, and I created a document called Domain 1, Security and Risk Management, and I just started taking notes in that document. So I would have a big header that was talking about that specific topic, and then have regular sized headers underneath for each video. And then I would bold important points inside of the text as I'm taking the notes.
So for those of you who are sort of listening and following along at home, I think the big takeaway that Joe's doing well is sort of engaging with the material as you're watching it. So you don't want to watch this video library like you're watching Netflix, or you don't want to read the textbook like you're reading a Harry Potter novel.
No, I don't think that's a good idea.
Right. Or else it's just going to pass over you. It's like osmosis, in and out. You have to actively engage with the material.
Right.
So, Joe, after you did the material, you sat through it, you took notes, you digested it, reworded it, did you quiz or retest yourself on that material? And if so, how'd you do?
I did. I watched the big lecture.
Okay.
I set some time aside from that. I printed out the notes that come along with it.
The lesson book?
The lesson book, yes. That's what it's called.
look, there's no official word for it. Whatever works for you. I know what you're talking about though.
And I took some notes on that.
Okay.
And then after finishing that, I took the quiz, or the end of the unit quiz, and I got an 85%.
Great. That's
which
good.
Is an improvement from 70%.
Sure.
Which I would consider to be acceptable. I would consider 85 to be good enough to consider the material learned.
Sure.
Or at least learned enough at the end of the classes or the lectures.
And that's the key I want to hone in on, because I think the timing matters, right? So you obviously sound like you did the quiz in short order after going through material. The material is fresh in your brain. Right.
A little bit. I waited probably 6 hours between the two.
Great.
It was on a Saturday.
Yeah, there you go. So I think that makes sense. It's a good score. It means you were able to follow all the material and retain some of it. But the key is to kind of keep spacing that time out when you take the quiz. So maybe day one, it's 6 hours. But then you can use the QBank, and in 48 hours, you take another quiz on domain one to see if you can retain that information. And then you, as you're studying domain four, you also want to go back to domain one and take another quiz. Just again, make sure that information is staying fresh.
Right.
And you can actually move it to your long-term memory. So it's kind of like a continuous process.
I'll be doing that, yes. Because testing is also is a pretty good learning experience as well. With immediate feedback, and you can go back and see where your weaknesses are and immediately, you can learn the material that you missed. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's also a really good perspective to have on it. You were saying that I think you're a good test taker because you have that perspective. You have to have that same perspective in studying too, in the sense where you just said, think of it as a interesting data point about yourself. Mm-hmm. A wrong question is not a bad thing. A wrong question is learning about yourself and an opportunity to learn the material.
Right.
So get excited, try to get motivated, try to reframe it. Like, oh, I'm not frustrated I got it wrong. This is an opportunity for me to learn that I got it wrong and learn how to get it right the next time. So Joe, sounds like you have a pretty good path forward.
Right.
Get ready, buckle up, because domain 2 is a little bit weaker from your diagnostic assessment.
That's correct. So I didn't do as well on the diagnostic with domain 2. Which is surprising to me. I thought I would have done a lot better with assets, but I didn't.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right? Because sometimes your real-world experience doesn't always translate to the test world.
Right.
So next time we talk, we will keep going with your journey, and we'll talk a little bit more about domain 2, or at least conceptually how to wrestle with a domain that's a little bit harder to grasp.
Excellent.
That's my Hacking Humans co-host, Joe Kerrigan, joined by our Learning Layer host, Sam Meisenberg. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. And finally, Elon Musk, in what we can only speculate was a characteristic spur-of-the-moment decision, renamed Twitter to X last summer. Despite this, the world, including official pages on the platform itself, stubbornly clings to Twitter as its name. We refer to it as X-Twitter, trying to straddle clarity and practicality. Attempting a forceful push towards the new branding, X's iOS app started covertly changing mentions of Twitter.com to X.com in user posts, without user consent. This hasty move spiraled into a debacle. Imagine for a moment someone owns netflitwitter.com. Under Musk's erratic change, posting this on X morphs it into netflix.com, a golden ticket for phishing scams. Realizing the potential havoc, vigilant users quickly snagged such domains to avert disaster, one even setting up a warning page on netflitwitter.com. X-Twitter scrambled to patch this mess, but the fix was partial, leaving many references still forcibly changed from twitter.com to x.com. This not only oversteps by modifying user content without permission, but also underlines a risky underestimation of the change's implications, demonstrating yet another instance of Musk's impulsive decision-making wreaking unnecessary confusion. The irony? X.com still redirects to Twitter.com, a fitting emblem of this chaotic rebranding effort. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karp. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpe, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.